Hello, and welcome to episode 209 of Dark and Stormy Book Club. Today is our third episode of interviews for Agatha nominees for the 2021 Malice Domestic Awards. Today we have a visit with Judy L. Murray and Jan Brogan, both nominees, so enjoy.
I'm Ann Dart.
I'm Tracy Stormy.
And I'm Kathy Knight.
And together we are
It Was a Dark and Stormy Book Club,
a podcast for mystery lovers.
Welcome.
If you enjoy our show, please consider contributing to the Dark and Stormy Patreon. By becoming a patron, you will help us create better and quality content. There are also benefits to becoming a patron, such as exclusive content and Dark and Stormy merchandise. Become a supporter at patreon.com/darkandstormybc. Check our website for the link. We appreciate any and all contributions. Thank you.
We would like to welcome Judy L. Murray to the program. She is the Agatha nominee for the Best First Novel for Murder in the Master. Welcome, Judy.
Thank you both, Anne and Tracy. I'm delighted to be here, and I appreciate your having interest in my novel.
We are so excited because our little neck of the woods is in your book. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
It certainly is. And in fact, the murder mystery takes place in a little village on the Chesapeake Bay, at the top of the bay in Maryland. It is, frankly, I think very much a part of the book. It's a character in itself. And if anyone has been to the Chesapeake, they know it can be quite beautiful. That is very interesting. I actually touch on different, through my characters and descriptions, I talk about the boating life, the seafood, the fact that these villages go back hundreds of years, and that there are still people on this bay that make a living, like the crabbers and those type of fishermen that make a living like they did 100 years ago. So as a result, these Chesapeake villages are going through a bit of I'll call it a transformation, because you have people that are discovering the bay even more so, and the water and being accessible to the water. And there's a little bit of a conflict there, because you have the locals that have been there 100 years and they have to go through a bit of adjustment as these new people move in. So that's even part of the storyline.
Is it a series? Is there a protagonist?
The protagonist, her name is Helen Morrissey. The name Helen comes because my mother's name was Helen. And she always believed that I should be a full-time writer. But this being my debut novel, this is one of those dreams you want to accomplish and you want to start. But of course, practicality in life always gets in the way, right? Or it can. So yes, my protagonist is Helen Morrissey, and she is a very smart woman. She's in her 50s. I wanted to be someone who's not a youngster. And I wanted to be someone who's smart and caring. And that is a person that she has to go to work every day. She didn't inherit a B&B or something along that line. She has to go to work. She has to make a living. She's a recent widow. Her husband died about 3 years ago, and that actually becomes a part of this storyline. And it also is a woman who cares a lot about the people around her. So what happens is, literally in the first paragraph, she is running a public open house for a builder. She walks into the master bedroom. And there she finds him naked and dead in the master bedroom on the bed. She's immediately concerned for a lot of reasons, one of which is because she has a very close friend back from childhood who was having an affair with him. That person, of course, becomes a person that's considered a likely suspect. And Helen gets involved in helping her friend prove her own innocence. And so, interestingly enough, Helen, you'll find out, has huge interest in murder mysteries. Her bookcases in her house are loaded with mystery stories. And she decides, in order to figure out who's responsible for this murder, she decides she's going to call together the women on her bookshelf that she feels each bring something unique to figuring out who's responsible. So what she does is she mentally creates this detection club. much like Dorothy L. Sayers and Agatha Christie had back in the 30s. So she pulls together Jane Marple, Agatha Raisin, Nora Charles, Jessica Fletcher, and of course, Nancy Drew. So those primarily five women, they help feed her the ideas and thought processes that help her work herself through the clues of what has happened and why this happened. It's been very interesting, actually, because that was not part of the original storyline. I knew right from the beginning that it would be centered around what happened tied into a real estate crime. As I started thinking about this, I developed the idea of the detection club and introducing these characters that she consults. So they are her sleuths. They are her squad, I guess a good way of putting it. She calls on them to help her out in figuring out this mystery and how this happened. What's interesting about this is that my readership, I cannot tell you how many of my reviews referred to that and loved it. They just embraced the concept. So
well, you sold me as soon as you said definitely. The people in that club. Sign me up.
Sign me up. I know. You two would fit in perfectly.
Oh, what a great idea to focus a book on. That is amazing.
And we hear that so often that these books and the people within them kind of write their own story. These ideas just spawn. And I just think that is so cool.
Thank you very, very much. It was one of those ideas that, you know, like I said, sort of evolved as I'm mid-manuscript. You know, how this light bulb goes off as it can with as a writer. I thought, well, let's see how it goes. And it just really added a whole new element. We have all these different women injecting their own skill sets, I'll call it that, and their personalities into the storyline.
I can't wait to read.
Terrific. That's great. That
sounds exciting.
It is.
Is your protagonist based on a real person?
I probably would say it's a combination of people, which is probably the case in a lot of time situations. But I have spent 35, 40 years in real estate. I was a salesperson, a sales manager, a coach, a trainer, was in charge of marketing programs. I really was in this business in every avenue you can think of. And by doing that, you become very immersed, obviously, in how this business really works. And what's interesting about this, too, is a lot of people don't realize it, but real estate was probably one of the first industries where women had the opportunity to break that glass ceiling as far as income was concerned and as far as their roles and their leadership opportunities, because you're an independent person and within a broker. So it's that kind of opportunity for women which makes it, I think, interesting if they're hard workers, if they're smart. So, you know, in that respect, I think real estate brings a lot to this table. And of course, on the flip side, you know, with everything you see on television, that kind of thing, HDTV is not real. Probably one of my major motivating factors in writing this story. And it is a series, by the way, I didn't answer your question. It's the first in a series. But one of my major motivators is people are very interested in real estate. They find it fascinating. Obviously, it touches everyone's personal life in very significant ways. But they really don't know much about how it really works. And I wanted to introduce that also in the storyline and give people more of a sense of what day-to-day could be about. So it makes it fun and it makes it interesting. And, you know, it's one of those backgrounds, I think, that adds a lot to the story.
Let's talk about why we're here.
Okay.
The Agatha Award. Have you ever been to Malice?
I have. I've been twice. I went years ago, probably about 7 years ago, as I was starting to really, you know, say I wanted to fit in the time to start getting this going, this career of mine in writing. I had gone then, and then I went, I guess, with the 2019, and I think you were there also.
Yes, so, we were.
Yeah. You said something in one of your podcasts that I heard, and I was there. I had just signed on with a literary agent, which is Blue Ridge Literary Agency, Dawn Dowdle. I don't know if you don't know Dawn. She specializes in mysteries and cozies and thrillers, that type of thing. Anyway, and so I was there for that conference. It was terrific. It's a great conference. The people are just so much fun to meet and you learn a whole lot. So yes, it's enjoyable. And I'm very excited, obviously, this Agatha nomination, thrilled. You know, how could I not be? And obviously up against a lot of very, very strong writers. So I'm thrilled to be a part of that group. I really am.
We will definitely be pulling for you because you're a hometown girl.
I am. I certainly am. And I'm hoping it will introduce people from around the world and our country, obviously, that don't know the Chesapeake to discover it.
Well, I love your little, the Chesapeake isn't always cozy. I love that.
Yes, that's great.
So glad.
Speaking of your website, yes. Would you like to tell our listeners what that is?
Of course. Easily is JudyLMurrayMysteries.com. So they can find me easily there. And obviously they can find me on Facebook and Twitter and all those places. So,
and she's very active there.
Yes.
You might want to give her a follow.
Good. Thank you so much. That's really terrific. And it's been exciting. And I'll keep my fingers crossed for the Agatha Award. But I'll mention, too, that the second book will be coming out in early September of this year. And that one is going to be called Killer in the Kitchen. So all of it is always tied in with the fact that Helen is working. And she, of course, gets pulled into different situations, which I don't need to tell you, real estate agents, they know an awful lot about people's personal lives.
Well, I tell you what, Judy, when that second book comes out, because you're nice and close, maybe we can do an in-person interview and have you back on.
That would be so much fun. And I'd be happy to meet you wherever you need to meet. That would be quite a treat. It really was. Thank you all. Thank you both and your partner, Kathy, because it really is a treat to be and an honor to be on this show.
And you'll meet all three of us at Malice.
I can't wait. Why don't I do this? I will make sure that I bring some extra copies along for you. Okay?
Wonderful.
Sounds good.
Judy, we thank you for talking with us.
Appreciate you being here tonight.
You enjoy the rest of your evening.
You too. Take care now.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. We would like to welcome to the program Jan Brogan. She is nominated for an Agatha for nonfiction category for The Combat Zone, Murder, Race, and Boston's Struggle for Justice. Welcome, Jan.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here with you guys.
What gave you the inspiration to write this book?
I've written 4 murder mysteries. When I finished my last one, it was probably 2007 because it came out in 2008. It was a series and I wanted to do something new. I had learned to successfully make up crime and make it suspenseful. And I thought to myself, there's so much crime in the world anyway. And what I really was looking for, a story that, not that I could tell, but that needed to be told. I kept saying that enough times and at enough cocktail parties that someone in my town hooked me up with Danny Popolo, who is the son of, you know, the victim of this terrible murder. And even then, I debated because I looked at it. First, he was killed, got justice. And then it wasn't until I looked at the trials and then also learned about the significance of the trial on Massachusetts justice and also eventually going up to the Supreme Court, national justice, that I thought, well, this is definitely a story that needs to be told. That's how I got involved in this. And that was probably 10 years ago.
Do you feel that if you were going to write this as a fiction story, it would be appropriate to come out around this time with all the stuff that's going on in the world? Because we're in Maryland and we were here during the Freddie Gray trial. So we are very familiar with injustice. So did you feel the timing was right for this book?
When I started, of course, none of this was happening. And this sort of evolved along the way as I learned more and more. It is obviously applicable because there's a lot of injustice in the criminal justice system. And this is one of the cases that really put a stop in Massachusetts from excluding Blacks on juries, which was extremely common practice all through the country. I learned this along the way. It wasn't a factor in me starting the case, but when I first started, it was this victim did not get justice. And then I realized he did not get justice, but it was because a lot of Black victims had not gotten justice. There were intervals when I gave up this project and I had thought about fictionalizing it. I just couldn't because I was so emotionally involved in the truth at that point that I did not have the freedom to veer from it like you need to when you write fiction. But there is actually a fictional book out about the same murder and it's called Hush Hush by Gabriel Vargian. His book I'd say it's inspired by this case because it takes the facts and alters them radically. But that's what fiction does. And that's why I couldn't write fiction, because I couldn't radically change these facts, because I'm the journalist on this case. I can't be the fiction writer on this case.
For our listeners who aren't familiar with this case, can you give a brief synopsis?
This was in 1976, and it was the murder of a Harvard football player, Andy Popolo, in Boston's Combat Zone. And the Combat Zone was Boston's red light district. It was four block area. It was very controversial. It was very wild in the height of the 70s. Police were corrupt and turning their gazes away to solicitations on the street through stopped cars. There were muggings, there were pickpocketing, there were murders. It was just a wild, wild time, and it had gotten out of hand. And just the week before this murder, to give you an idea how corrupt it was, incoming police chief had done a secret investigation on his own police force to show how corrupt it was so that he could get some power to change it. And this was a mob owned 40 to 50% of all the clubs. This was the time of Whitey Bulger. This was a really corrupt time. Several football teams in Boston had an annual ritual after they celebrated their last game, very formal dinner at the Harvard Club with Ethel Kennedy there to present an award in memory of her husband. They went from the very high class and Tony Harvard Club to 40 of them went down to the Combat Zone for a last drink together at one of the strip clubs. And at the time, there was a very common pickpocket scam where women who either were prostitutes or dressed like prostitutes would sidle up to the drunk men leaving the bars and fondle them and steal their wallets. It was a very common scam. The Week Police report that had just been published the week before, which had announced that a lot of them had men working for them as protectors, who, if one of the guys complained about losing his wallets, they would step in to protect the women pickpocket. The police chief I interviewed said it was so corrupt down there, some of the cops would protect pickpockets, and it was all for a cut of the wallet. There are 40 guys, and they break up to find their own ways home. So they're in different cars and different transportation. Andy Popolo was in the back of a parked car about to go home. Another group of Harvard football players with the equipment manager going past a strip club. One of the women sidles up to one of the football players. He's drunk. He brags about the $50 in his wallet. The women are either invited to or follow them back to the Harvard equipment van. One of them gets in, who knows what happens in 2 to 3 minutes, and jumps out with his wallet. And then they chase after this young female prostitute. You're not supposed to say prostitute anymore. Say sex worker. But in the Combat Zone, this is a place with all sorts of sex workers. I have to be specific. The term they used then was prostitute, so I use the term. These women weren't necessarily prostitutes, but they were identifying as prostitutes. They wanted the men to think they were prostitutes so they could get the wallet. These Harvard football players, they chase one of the prostitutes. They actually catch her. She falls. She says, I don't have the wallet. And then they let her go. And at that moment, a black guy comes up and punches one of the guys. They all stand up. They wound up around an MBTA station. Other Harvard football players are looking on now and coming around. So there's maybe 8 Harvard football players surrounding one black guy. And another black guy comes, jumps over and stabs one of the football players in the abdomen. At this point, they know they're out of their league. Oh my God, they've got knives. And they run 2 blocks back to the Harvard van. They turn tail and they run. 3 black guys come after them. They all get in the van except for the guy who started everything with the wallet. They have him out against the van and they're pounding him. And Andy Popolo, who has gotten out of his car to see what's going on, sees that this teammate is overmatched and goes to help him. And he's the one who winds up getting stabbed to death. They get into the hospital, they think in time, but he's in a coma for a month and then he dies. This is a huge story because it's 1976, which is an era where northern cities particularly are very poor at this time. It's hard to imagine because that's where so much wealth is these days, but they're very poor. And it's also before the internet and the VCR. So if you wanted to see porn, you had to go to a movie theater. They call it the age of porn. All these theaters are opening up in these northern cities. And the Supreme Court has said you can't censor it because they have the freedom of speech. So the cities can't do anything about it. And it's causing outrage all over the nation. Plus, there are snuff films. So it's an issue that's very big. It's three Black guys getting arrested for stabbing two Harvard football players, 306 newspapers across the country and as far away as Stars and Stripes in Japan cover this murder. It's a big deal. And for Boston, the press is nonstop. It's really not about the victim. It's about the combat zone because the whole city has been controversial for a while. Crime has been going up. Everybody wants to shut it down, including the Suffolk District Attorney. It becomes a trial about much more than the victim. It's first, it's a trial about the combat zone and putting an end to it. And then it becomes, this is during busing in Boston. The city is in the midst of what I call almost like a racial war. And so very quickly, the trial becomes about race. And one of the tragedies of this case is that it's almost never about the victim.
That sounds fascinating. I am definitely going to read this book.
A lot of the book has to do with the family. I was giving unusual access to the family, and particularly Andy's 19-year-old younger brother. And the media portrays this as Harvard privilege, but Andy Popolo is anything but. He's from the Italian North End. His father's an Italian immigrant. He got to Harvard by terrific grade. And once he's there, he dedicates himself to football. I mean, he's worked hard in Boston at that time. It's very tribal. And the other sad thing about this is it becomes known as a very racist trial. Andy Popolo's name gets associated with racism. Interviewed a lot of people who knew him, a lot of his friends and his Black friends, because he was so sick of being called a Guinea by the Irish that on every team, he made a point of meeting and befriending all the Black players. And I had several Black players.
Oh, wow.
His name gets associated with racism. Even 40 years later, this is. And I'm saying, remember that Harvard football player? They said, oh, yeah, that racist who chased after the prostitute. No, no, that's wrong. He didn't chase after any prostitutes. And he wasn't a racist. But the way the trial was conducted was racist. He's a victim by all that. I believe he was hurt by racism as much as some of the Black victims. He suffered the outfall of it, or his family did, because to them, they did not get justice.
Well, on a happy note, what was your reaction when you were nominated?
Yeah, I was shocked and thrilled, obviously. I had been to Malice, I think before my first murder mystery came out, a long time ago. That was like 2001. At that time, there was no category for true crime. I didn't even know that was a category. So I was thrilled to be nominated. It's such an honor.
Are you going to attend?
I am planning on attending. I'm working out the logistics. My brother and sister-in-law live outside of Annapolis, Maryland. I'm going to combine it with a family trip.
Oh, so, well, that's great. So we'll look forward to introducing ourselves.
Oh, you're going to be there? Oh, that's
oh,
great.
Oh, yes, we will be there.
I feel a little shy about it, to tell you the truth, because, you know, I've kind of lost touch with the mystery world when I was writing this book, because I was so deep into this. I feel oddly shy, but Gabriel is going to be there, so he promised to have a drink with me.
You shouldn't feel shy. One of the things we found out, they are such a welcoming group of people. They made us feel welcome our first time. And
that's great.
Are you working on anything new?
Last week, I just finished Changes of a historical novel that I've also been working on for a very long time about the women who went whaling with their husbands. And I set this during the Civil War, which is the curtain call for whaling, because a lot of people don't realize that part of the Civil War, the Confederates, to get the North away from the blockade, had Confederate raiders who hunted the seas for Northern whale ships and merchant ships and burned them at sea. It was like 550 pages or something. So I had to reduce it to 400 pages for my agent. The title of that right now is called Wailing Wives. There is a mystery in it. I don't know if they will market it as a mystery. I mean, there is certainly a compelling mystery in it because one of the women is looking for her father who doesn't return from his trip and is called a deserter.
Well, we have a lot of fans of any kind of historical books, and we love them too. And they don't necessarily have to be a mystery for us to enjoy them.
Oh, great. I write fiction and nonfiction, and I have to figure out what I want to do next. I emailed one of the lawyers that was involved, actually the defense attorney in the second trial, who is just a fabulous defense attorney, Norman Zalkind. I asked him, I really like writing about criminal justice. My father was a lawyer. My brother is a judge. My other brother was a lawyer. My husband was a lawyer. And I worked in my father's law office all through high school. So I have this affinity for criminal justice. So I'm looking for historic legal cases that you know, changed something that really had an impact on the law or the culture. And so, and also with the combat zone, a lot of the book is the personal story of the narrative of Danny Popolo, the younger brother. They come from a North End culture, which is the Italian section. And this is an era right after The Godfather where revenge is like a noble calling. In this particular case, I had like a reporter tell me that nobody thought this would actually go to the first trial because they were convinced that the mob would kill these three men in prison or have them killed in prison. Danny was also told frequently that the mob would get them because this was, you know, the prince of the North End had been the victim. And also because the way they shut down the combat zone, all those mob owned businesses, money. So a lot of the story is how Danny comes to believe that it's his job to seek revenge, how he goes about trying to get that revenge and what he learns. It's a very personal story along with the trial. And so I'm looking for another project that has those components because I think it's really Danny's story that makes the book and makes it, you know, suspenseful and readable. So, and also just very human. I'm looking for just the right historic case that I could write about next.
Well, definitely keep us posted.
I will. And hopefully it won't take me 10 years.
Well, Jan, we thank you so much for talking with us, and we wish you all the good luck with your nomination and your books, and we look forward to meeting you at Malice.
Thank you so much for inviting me onto your show, and I also look forward to meeting you at Malice.
All right. Well, you enjoy the rest of your evening.
You guys too.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That brings us to the end of another episode. We thank you for listening. We hope you listen next week. We have a very special guest appearing on our program. And remember,
life would be boring without a little mystery.
Bye.